Good. Someday, there will be the proper time to recognize Corin for his achievements. I promise you that. Until then, would you like to do something that might help Corin? Yes. Ariana's mood brightened. Find out why Kaer brought Corin to sit with the Falcos. Kaer must have known Corin would be humiliated. What we need to know is why. Why are the Falcos interested in the wizard's servant? Corin found he greatly enjoyed riding with the army. The soldiers, except for those few who resented his wizard-spelled skill with the sword, liked him and treated him as one of their own. Corin ate his meals while sitting around a campfire with the soldiers. The soldiers were happy to have someone who had not already heard all their stories, lies, and jokes. And Corin was happy to hear the stories, lies, and jokes, even when he couldn't tell the difference between them. When Captain Radic decided it was time, at the end of a long day of riding, for drill with weapons, formations both on foot and horseback, and other training, Corin took his place with the soldiers, griping and complaining just as they did. Although he did not take a turn standing guard at night, he rose early to bring coffee and hot food to the soldiers who were guarding the camp in the wee hours of the morning. Carrying the pail of hot coffee, Corin carefully stepped around the sleeping forms of soldiers until he came to the edge of the campsite. Corin knew his vision at night was far better than most people. It had been that way ever since he could remember, so he didn't think it was the result of another spell Pages had cast on him. He had no trouble following the faint trail of flattened grass up to where the sentries were posted. He also could move very quietly, so he took care to make noise as he approached the guards, lest he startle a guard and be the target of an arrow in the darkness. "Halt! Who goes there?" a woman's voice called out. "Corin Bladewell. The password is Cornstalk." "Yes, it is," the woman chuckled. "Advance and be recognized. Did you bring something to eat?"
"Just coffee. The cooks don't have breakfast ready yet."
Seeing the disappointment on the soldiers' faces, Corin reached into his pocket with a smile. "But I do have this sweet cake that Pedras didn't eat last night."
"Ah, give it here, my good man."
Corin split the sweet cake into three pieces and sat eating quietly with the two soldiers, looking off into the darkness. As they were still inside Tarador, no one expected an enemy attack, and the sentries were bored.
"Let me see your face," the woman named Blogel said, and studied Corin's cheek in the dim moonlight.
"Huh, you'll have a bruise, nothing more. If they do that again, you call for me. We'll teach them a lesson."
"They hit you hard."
Yesterday, Corin had been sparring with two soldiers who resented his wizard-spelled combat skills. Corin found he could usually hold off three soldiers if they were only using practice swords. After getting whacked with Corin's sword too many times, the men called three of their friends, and in the melee, Corin had taken a hard blow to the face before an officer stepped in and broke up the fight. The five men were now on punishment duty, and Corin would try to avoid them when he could.
"I hit them harder," Corin said with a grin. And that was the truth.
He had hit them hard. Even with the padding wrapped around Corin's dwarf-made shortsword, it still hurt to get whacked on the arm or in the belly.
"And you did. You did," Blogel agreed,
patting Corin on the back. She liked the young servant boy. He reminded her of her brother back on the family farm. With women making up only 14 of the 100 soldiers in Radic's century, the women tended to stick together, and they had sort of adopted Corin, looking after the boy.
"Tell me, that story I heard, about you rescuing the princess from a bear or bandits or something, was that true?"
"Bah," the other soldier, a man named Kregger, snorted. "Next you'll be believing the boy pulled the cornerstone out of his pocket and gave it to the princess."
"Let the boy speak, Kregger," True or not, it's a good story.
Corran took a deep breath and repeated the story Pedras told them to use, if the subject ever came up.
There was a bear, a really big one, and the guards say they found bandits in the woods later. The bear came out of the woods, it was being chased by a swarm of bees, and it knocked over the boat. I pulled the princess out of the river.
Huh. Blogel sounded disappointed.
She could have drowned, I guess, if you hadn't been there.
Corran grinned and nodded vigorously.
Princesses can't swim, with all those fancy clothes they wear.
Blogel laughed.
Wait till she gets the crown on her head. She really won't be able to swim then.
I hear what you were doing in those woods was poaching Duke Yaron's deer,
Kregger asked.
I didn't see any signs against poaching, Corran grumbled, and mostly it was fish anyway.
Lucky you saved the princess then, before Yaron's sheriff caught you.
Kregger looked at Corran sharply.
Dukes don't take kindly to poachers.
Blogel slapped her fellow guard on the head.
Give the boy his due, Kregger. Besides, can you tell me you've never taken a deer or two when you were hungry and the sheriff wasn't looking?
Well,
Kregger grunted, then smiled.
Maybe. Gotta keep them darned lazy sheriffs on their toes, right?
Quite right, quite right.
Blogel took a sip of coffee.
So, Corran, you ever thought of being a soldier?
Corran looked down at the ground. Soldiers came from common folk, but the officers only took men from good families who could vouch for their character. Without a family, Corran didn't think being a soldier was an option for him.
I work for Pedras. That's what I do.
Yes, of course, but what about your future?
Kregger asked.
You're not going to live in a cubbyhole in the wizard's tower forever, are you?
Young man like yourself needs to think of the future.
Do you have a girl? Women like men who have a future ahead of them. If you're not going to be a soldier, are you going to learn a trade or rent some land to farm? You come from farmers, don't you?
Corran glumly admitted he had not thought much beyond being the wizard's servant. He had saved almost every coin Pedras had paid to him, little as that was.
I do know farming. I suppose it would be nice to have land of my own some day.
There you go,
Kregger said encouragingly.
I have a little plot of land myself, a couple acres set aside. Plan to live there some day when I'm done soldiering, and be lord of my own land.
Ha! You a lord?
Blogel laughed.
Your soldiering will be done when an orc splits you with an axe.
Don't listen to her, Corran. Be on your way now. There's more of us needing coffee this morn. You think on what we said about your future. Here.
Pedras, how long do you, think you want me to work for you?
The wizard's eyebrows flew up and set down the mug of coffee he had been drinking.
You don't like being here?
It had never occurred to Pedras that a lowly peasant boy would not enjoy being the court wizard's servant.
Yes, sir. I am very grateful. It's great living in the castle, I mean, in your tower, sir. It's just that most boys my age would be learning a trade for the future. If I'm ever to get married someday, I would need a place of my own.
Married?
Pedras exclaimed, astonished. Corran had been spending time with Ariana.
No, it couldn't be.
Corran had rescued the princess, but surely he was not such a fool that he considered her a sweetheart. This could be a disaster. Pedras was so shocked by the unexpected conversation that his face took on a scowl that Corran mistook for anger.
You have a girl in mind?
No. Sir,
not now. I don't have a trade on my own land. My mother would say I'm not a good catch. But someday...
Corin looked at the floor, embarrassed. Then he blurted out, "I can't live in a cubbyhole forever, sir."
Paedras felt a shiver of relief. There was no romance with the princess.
Corin was nothing but a normal boy wanting to know of his future. But what could Paedras say?
That Corin would, in a short few years, replace Paedras as the most powerful wizard in Tarador and have a castle of his own to live in?
The wizard cleared his throat.
"Corin, in your young life, you have already rescued a princess and found the lost cornerstone. You may stay here as long as you like. Personally, I don't know what I would do without you, but I can certainly understand that a young man like you needs to think of the future. Have you considered a trade you would like to be trained in?"
"I know how to farm, sir, raise crops, and I'm good with animals. Someday, I suppose, I would like land of my own."
"Hmm." Paedras rubbed his beard while he thought.
"Corin, when I agreed to take the position here as court wizard, I didn't only get fancy robes and an awkward old tower to live in. There is a grant of land that comes with it. The land was supposed to be a country escape for me. I've only been to see my land once or twice. It's about 2 days' ride to the north, but it's nice enough. The family down the road farms my land, and we split the money from sale of the crops. If you like, in a few years, you could live there and raise crops for me. I think I remember there is a small house and a barn."
Paedras had a flash of inspiration.
"In fact, I will make a bargain with you. If you remain here as my servant until your 16th birthday, then I will give a quarter of my land to you."
"Give me, sir?"
Corin gaped at the wizard.
"I certainly have no need for it. I don't know the first thing about farming."
"My own land?"
Corin said in a whisper.
"It's not much, mind you. A quarter of the land is only about 50 acres.
50 acres?
Paedras was taken aback.
"Is that too small for a farm?"
"No!"
50 acres was more land than his family had owned. Now Corin had to sit down. His shaky legs could not support him.
"No, it's very generous, sir. 50 acres.
Here, drink this. You look pale."
While Corin gratefully drank the coffee,
Paedras pondered how to get out of the sticky mess he'd talked himself into. Technically, he didn't own the land he had just promised to give Corin. The Trehames owned it. The land was for Paedras to use while he served as the court wizard, but he didn't own it. Perhaps Paedras could persuade Carlana to give the land to Corin as a well-deserved reward for his service to Tarador. A quiet grant of land would not likely attract the enemy's attention to Corin, and if Carlana did not agree, Paedras himself would buy the land for Corin. The wizard had enough money of his own. Raising the money would require selling some of his own land in Estada. Perhaps he should write to his nephew there. Yes. The more Paedras thought, the more he liked the idea of Corin being away from the castle, away from prying eyes, while Paedras trained him in wizardry. The way the boy's power was growing, by the time Corin was 16, there would be no way Paedras could hide the truth from him any longer.
"Huh?"
Paedras realized Corin had been saying something.
"Sir, how can I ever thank you?"
"Bah!" The wizard waved his hand. "It is the least I could do, considering all you have done for Tarador. Now, finish your breakfast. Captain Radic wants us packed and ready to ride in half a glass."
By the time Ariana was able to ask Kyr about why Corrin had been with the Falcos in the Regency Council meeting, her anger had only grown. She'd been forced to wait for the end of the council meetings, then the 3 days of the Cornerstone Festival, then Kyr had joined other royal boys in a hunting expedition that had lasted 6 whole days. She had been miserable during the Cornerstone Festival, feeling nauseous when people praised her for finding that fabled lost object. She had practiced what she would say to the Falco boy, clever words to trap him in the lies he would inevitably tell. She was determined to get the truth out of Kyr Falco. Kyr was feeling particularly good that day. The hunting expedition had been fun, with far more racing about across the countryside on horseback and general tomfoolery than hunting. A chance for young royals to get away from the formality of the royal castle, showing off, pretending they were roughing it, when all their meals were cooked for them, and they slept every night in comfortable lodges or in large, fancy tents that were set up by servants. One night, Kyr had insisted that one of his older servants, who was not feeling well and suffered especially from the still-cold nights, sleep in Kyr's tent, while Kyr put his bedroll under the simple tarp his guards shared. Other royal boys laughed at him when he helped cook breakfast and brought food to his ill servant, then helped take down and pack away the tents. But Kyr didn't mind their jeers. His servants worked hard for him, and he trusted his guards with his life. Such loyalty deserved to be rewarded, rather than the disdain and abuse many royals gave to the common-born people who served them. Kyr wished his father understood that. It took so little effort to make common people happy. They were grateful for even simple gestures from royalty. Treating people fairly and with dignity not only ensured their loyalty, it felt good. Kyr's father felt that any familiarity with servants would lead only to shirking of duty and, eventually, questioning of orders and disobedience. It is far more proper, Regan Falco advised, for servants to fear their masters, lest they assume undeserved equality with their royal betters. Kyr Falco wondered if his father considered whether, in case of a dire threat, who would be more reliable? People who served only out of fear, or those who served from a sense of loyalty? Loyalty had to work both ways. So, Kyr was feeling good after having earned his father's grudging pleasure for Kyr successfully getting Corrin to leave the castle for several months at least, after enjoying a smashingly good time at the Cornerstone Festival, and coming back tired but happy from the hunting expedition. And now, being called to an audience with the Crown Princess in her private chambers. Kyr had asked Niles Faun what the princess wanted, but his adviser had no idea, having returned to the castle only a few hours before the invitation from the princess arrived. Faun had been frantic, calling in all his informants, but no one had anything useful to report. The princess had been tired after the festival and kept mostly to herself, receiving few visitors other than for her official duties, which didn't give Faun any clue as to why Kyr had been invited to the palace. All Faun was able to do was to get Kyr properly dressed and send him on his way. Thus it was that Kyr had no idea what Ariana wanted to talk about when he was announced at the door to her private chambers in the palace. He had no idea, but he was hopeful. He had done well in the games before the Cornerstone Festival, winning several sparring contests and a long horse race. Perhaps he had caught the eye of the princess. Ariana was in her study, a small but pleasant room with a large window that gave a view out over the gardens. "Your Highness," he said, as he bowed deeply to the princess. Then he turned and gave a short bow to her maid. "Mistress Hodgkins," he addressed Norelka,
I have heard that you like pine honey. Please accept this jar I bought in the Wendern Hills.
I... Norelka didn't know what to do, being taken aback by Kaya's gesture. Honey from the pine forest in the Wendern Hills was the best in the land, and her favorite.
She looked to Arianna for guidance. The princess seemed to be as surprised as Norelka was.
Arianna flicked her wrist in a gesture intended to be unseen by Kaya Falco. Norelka accepted the jar of honey, curtsied, and responded properly.
"Thank you, Your Grace," she said,
and retreated to the far corner of the room. Kaya's gesture had thrown Arianna off, and that irritated her. Instead of beginning with the usual meaningless niceties, she went right to the question she wanted to ask.
Why was Corin Bladewell sitting with the Falcos?
It was Kaya's turn to be taken aback.
Corin Bladewell had been the last thing on his mind. The boy was gone, and would be away for months, perhaps the entire summer.
He lamely slipped into a lie. I thought he would enjoy it, seeing everyone sitting around arguing. I wanted to get him away from his chores for an afternoon.
You invited Corin to be nice, because you are such close friends?
Arianna asked, her voice dripping with sarcasm.
We are friends,
although Corin deserved a better friend than Kaya.
You, Kaya Falco, friends with a common servant, a boy who doesn't even have a family? I think anyone would find that hard to believe.
He is my friend.
Or he thinks he is, Kaya thought guiltily.
He's the only person I know who doesn't want something from me. When Corin goes out riding with me, it's because he enjoys being outside the castle walls on his horse, not because he wants a favor from me or my family.
Kaya spoke quickly because it was the truth. He didn't need to wait while he thought up a good lie.
Everything else around here is politics.
He looked the princess directly in the eye as he spoke, and I grow sick of it sometimes.
A Falco who doesn't enjoy the game of scheming for power? Are you quite certain you are Kaya Falco?
Kaya was genuinely hurt.
You don't know me at all,
he responded hotly, forgetting he was speaking to the Crown Princess. You know what your family thinks of my family, the history of people long dead. How would you like it if people judged you only by what they think of your mother?
Arianna knew she would not like that at all.
I am to believe that you invited Corin to sit with you out of your well-known kindness to the common people? Why did your father's lapdog, Duke Bargan, object?
Kaya shrugged. He'd repeated the lie enough times now that he almost half believed it.
Bargan sometimes gets a burr under his saddle and needs to show he's not beholden to my father. They've had a dispute going since the beginning of the winter. I don't know what it's about,
he said truthfully, even though he was certain the dispute had nothing to do with Corin Bladewell. Niles Fawn had arranged for Duke Bargan to object to Corin being in the Regency Council meeting, and Bargan had played his part, likely hoping this small favor would help gain leverage in his dispute with the Falcos. Except, apparently, now that favor, the whole plan, had backfired on the Falcos, earned the ire of the Crown Princess.
Kaya's father was not going to be pleased about this.
Impulsively, Kaya asked, "Is that why Corin left before the Cornerstone Festival?"
Kaya couldn't remember now whether Corin had left the same day he'd been ejected from the Regency Council, or shortly after. It hadn't seemed important at the time, and Kaya had been very busy.
"No,"
Arianna said with a haughty toss of her head, to cover her own frustration at mishandling the conversation. Kaya's gift to Norelka had thrown Arianna completely off her plan. All her carefully crafted questions to steer the Falco heir into revealing the truth had vanished when she amateurishly blurted out the question on her mind.
Arianna's mother was not going to be pleased about this.
Lord Salva has business in Hofstra, which you would know if you'd been paying attention during the discussions. He left as soon as Captain Radick had his troops ready.
Kyr appeared to take a moment to consider Arianna's announcement. He spoke slowly and formally, while his mind raced to think.
My mistake, Your Highness. I did not remember. I spoke to Corrin after the Regency Council meeting to apologize for any embarrassment caused to him, and Corrin didn't mention that he was planning to leave the castle.
Kyr was telling the truth. Corrin had been upset. But why hadn't he said anything about going to Hofstra? Had Corrin suspected that Kyr set him up?
Will that be all, Your Highness?
Kyr needed to talk to Fawn about this terrible development,
figure out a way to make certain none of the blame came back to Kyr.
Arianna, more disgusted with herself than with Kyr Falco, simply nodded, her cheeks red with a mixture of anger and embarrassment. She was not going to let the matter drop, but she needed to be more subtle in the future.
Chapter 10. Corrin's head was still spinning while they rode that morning. He had plenty of time to think, because Captain Radick was not pressing his men to ride fast that morning. They only had 5 leagues to go, before stopping in a village for the middle of the day. Hadrus noticed that his servant was distracted.
Ah, I see you have rejoined us, Corrin.
Corrin's face grew red with embarrassment.
Yes, sir. I was thinking on something. Nothing important. Now that you've thunk, Hadrus said with a twinkle in his eye, I want you to do a favor for me. When we get to the village of Longsha, ride ahead with Radick and see if they have a room at the inn. After sleeping on a cot these last 3 weeks, my back could use a real bed for the night.
I thought we were only stopping here for the afternoon, sir.
Hadrus chuckled. That is Captain Radick's plan. But, as I'm sure there will be a child or a prize cow or a chicken that needs to be healed, why, it wouldn't be right for the court wizard to ignore the needy. Could keep us here until well after dark.
Oh, yes, sir.
Corrin winked.
Certainly, sir.
It was a fine day. The sky clear, the air fresh and warming, and the late morning sun drying the last of the dew that was still clinging to the underside of the fence rails alongside the road. The air smelled like fresh, clean earth, the homey scent of ploughed fields where seeds had only just begun to sprout. There were only a few wispy clouds on the horizon to the south, where Pedro said was the sea that formed Tarador's southern border.
The sea.
Corrin very much wanted to see that great body of water. Everyone who had seen it said he would be amazed. The biggest body of water Corrin had ever seen was a lake, and that not a large one, barely more than a pond. He had seen paintings of the sea and of the great ships with their towering white sails. It was hard to imagine a ship as big as a barn moving across the water. Up ahead of him, across the fields and around a bend in the road, he could see a barn, and beyond that, the roofs of a village. It was pleasant to be riding with the army, alongside the wizard, under a clear blue sky. He had a fine horse, a full belly, and not a care in the world at the moment. Here, it didn't matter whether dukes thought he belonged, or whether maids remembered his name, or whether a fickle princess liked him to be around that day or not. Here, he only had to ride and provide for the wizard's needs and comforts and keep out of trouble. Corrin was thoroughly enjoying himself out in the countryside where he belonged, instead of behind the grim stone walls of a castle. The country they rode through reminded him of Crichton. Low, gently rolling hills, open farm fields where the crops were beginning to come out of the ground and rise toward the sky,
neatly fenced pastures with sheep. Pastures with sheep.
Just sheep. No people. Corin rose from the saddle, looking all around, front and back. He sat back down, opened his mouth to speak, closed it, opened it, and closed it again. He stared at the sheep, then at the buildings of the village ahead, unsure of himself. His servant's odd behavior had not escaped the attention of the wizard, had not escaped the attention nor annoyance of the wizard, who was trying to concentrate.
Corin, if you have something to say, please say it and stop fidgeting.
Sir, it's the sheep.
Eh? What about them?
They looked like ordinary sheep to Pedrus. They're alone. No shepherd. Not even a dog. No farmer would leave his sheep alone like that, sir. They're too valuable. And too stupid.
Ugh.
Pedrus knew very little, zero, actually, about the care and raising of sheep.
Maybe the shepherd is...
Corin continued excitedly, keeping his voice low. And the village ahead, Longsha. Look, sir, see? There's no smoke coming from any of the chimneys. That big white building must be an inn or a tavern. The kitchen there should have a cooking fire for the noonday meal.
Corin closed his eyes. And, sir, I have a feeling like we're being watched.
Pedrus shaded his eyes with a hand and peered ahead at the cluster of buildings that made up the small village of Longsha. Corin was correct. None of the chimneys had smoke coming from them. The wizard bit his lip while he thought.
I don't see anyone in these fields. That is odd, isn't it?
Sir, now that I think about it, I don't remember seeing anyone for the past several leagues we've ridden. Not since we passed by that farm where the man was repairing the roof of his barn.
Corin had waved to the man who had paused in his work to wave back.
Sorry, I've been so woolly-headed this morning.
Pedrus closed his eyes tightly in concentration.
I don't sense anything.
Then that's good. Right, sir?
You don't understand. I can't sense anything.
I fear some other wizard is in the area,
and has cast a spell to dampen my senses. Damn it.
Pedrus cursed under his breath, the first time Corin had ever heard him curse.
We've all been woolly-headed this morning. Corin, I want you to make your way up to Captain Radic and tell him I think we are being watched. I know this area well. Just beyond the village there is a crossroads that leads to a bridge, the only bridge across the river for several leagues. Tell Radic that I advise him to make straight through the village and get across that bridge if trouble strikes. Go now, but don't ride too quickly. If there are eyes watching us, I don't want to alert them yet.
Yes, my lord.
Corin tugged back on the reins, let Thunderbolt fall behind the wizard's horse, crossed to the other side of the army column. Then he nudged Thunderbolt into a slow trot and crouched down in the saddle. As he passed by troops, he greeted them, laughing and joking, trying to act casually. He itched at the delay, for he and Pedrus had been riding at the rear of the column, just ahead of the supply wagons. He slowed Thunderbolt to a walk as he finally approached the front of the column, where Captain Radic rode. Corin saluted, his right hand to his temple, although he was not sure a servant and not a proper soldier was supposed to use that greeting. During the entire journey, Corin had never spoken to Radic. He had dealt with Radic's lieutenants instead.
Sir, Captain Radic.
Radic had been discussing something with one of his lieutenants and was annoyed by the interruption.
Yes? Boy, I'm busy. I'll talk to you later.
Begging your pardon, Captain, sir. This is wizard business and it can't wait,
Corin insisted. Radic was intimidating, but nowhere near as intimidating as Pedrus. Radic turned his attention from the lieutenant. The wizard wouldn't interrupt army business unless it was important.
Speak, boy.
Nervously, Corin blurted out,
Sir,
Those sheep are alone, no shepherd or dog around. We haven't seen anyone in the field since we passed that barn a few leagues back. None of the buildings in the village have smoke from their chimneys, and Pedro says there must be a wizard around, because he can't sense anything, nothing at all, which I guess is unusual for a wizard. He says he feels like we're being watched. Corin wasn't sure how wizard senses worked.
Whoa, whoa, slow down, boy. Sheep.
Radic twisted in the saddle to peer at the sheep, contentedly grazing in the pasture the army column was passing by.
Yes, sir, I think...
Corin stopped as Radic waved his hand for silence.
All right, there's no one in the fields, and the village ahead appears deserted.
Radic was alarmed now. He exchanged a glance with his lieutenant, who nodded grimly and said a very bad word under his breath. They were deep inside Tarador, so Radic had not bothered to have scouts ride on the army column's flanks. Deep inside Tarador, but less than 15 leagues from the seacoast. Could the enemy have landed a raiding party which had travelled so far inland? It was difficult to believe, but the enemy had been shockingly bold recently, even including an invasion of the Thralrin Woods. Radic didn't know the full story of how Arianna had been attacked, but Radic did know Arianna's visit to Lavan province had been cut short and her guard doubled.
I am a damned fool. What else did the wizard say?
Radic resisted the urge to gallop back to confer with the wizard himself.
He advises that, if we're attacked, you go straight through the village and across the bridge. He says it's the only bridge across the river for several leagues.
They had passed another bridge that morning, but it was so old that part of the center span had fallen into the river. It was useless as a bridge. Radic nodded agreement. He had ridden the road before. He was not in a good position. If the enemy had planned an ambush, they had planned it well. Just across the field to the east, the river had steep banks on both sides and was rushing deep and rapidly with the spring rains. The only way across the river was the bridge beyond the village ahead. Behind, the road went through a gap between two hills, which would be easy for the enemy to block. Ahead, the road squeezed between buildings and the village. His supply wagons could not travel across the fields and pastures. They were separated by stone walls, wood fences, and tree lines which acted as windbreaks between the fields. It was a good place for a prepared battle. Not good for an escape attempt. Radic made a quick decision.
Pentrick!
He turned back to his lieutenant.
When the wizard gives his signal, we ride through the town, enemy there or not. Leave the wagons. We get the men and the horses across that bridge yonder. Boy, drop back slowly, and tell Lord Selva that we await...
While Corin was talking to Captain Radic, Pedras called two soldiers, a man and a woman, and gave them orders. Here, in the Royal Army, he did have command authority.
Don't reach for your weapons, he began in a low voice. The enemy is near. I said, don't reach for your weapons,
he added in annoyance, as the younger soldier automatically gripped her sword and rose half out of the saddle.
What are your names?
The older man, a veteran of many battles, with a white scar across his forehead to prove it, answered,
Ottoman, Lord Selva. I was with you at the Battle of the Thralrin Wood, sir.
This undisciplined young one is D'Artenin.
D'Artenin tried to relax, but the inexperienced young soldier could not help glancing at the tree line atop a low ridge to the west. Artaman cuffed his companion on the side of her helmet.
Look straight ahead, you fool. What are your orders, my lord? Though it seems unlikely here, and on this fine spring morn, the enemy will attack soon. I have advised Captain Radic to make straight through the village and across the bridge, if he can. You two find my servant and get him to safety.
My lord? Artaman asked in surprise.
A servant's place was by his master's side, especially a wizard-spelled expert fighter like Corin Bladewell. Angrily, for he was running out of time,
Patras grabbed the front of Ataman's leather vest.
You get Corran to safety, even if it costs your lives. Do you hear me?
The wizard added a compulsion spell under his words, and the two soldiers stiffened.
Yes, my lord,
they said in unison.
I only hope we have time,
Pedrus began, before there was a terrible roar from the west, and the enemy stepped forward from the tree line.
Go, you fools!
Corran caused the enemy to spring their trap too early, for the enemy had seen Radic giving orders to his lieutenants, and seen D'Artenin grasp her sword. The enemy's plan had been to let the Tarradoran Royal Army's column pass by to the south, then emerge from the tree line and cut the road behind them, while enemy soldiers in the village ahead set up a barricade across the road. Instead, at the instant the enemy was sighted, two of Radic's lieutenants spurred their horses and led 10 soldiers toward the village as fast as they could ride. Another soldier spun his horse around and raced back along the column to tell the supply men to cut their horses loose and abandon the wagons. Radic's horse reared up as its master pulled back on the reins, and Radic stood in the stirrups and raised his sword high, crying out to the men behind him, "To me! To me!" More and more of the enemy were emerging from the tree line. Radic realized he was facing a substantial force, not a mere raiding party landed from a single ship. There were easily 300 of the enemy mounted on horseback, and he could see a few enemy soldiers in the village ahead, belatedly scrambling to set up a barricade. His two lieutenants were almost at the village. The enemy dropped the tree they intended to use as a barricade and fumbled for their bows. The main body of the enemy charged from the tree line with another roar, racing down the pasture, scattering the panicked sheep. Radic waved his men forward with his sword, letting them pass him by, so he could attend to the rear of the column. As Radic wheeled his horse around to face the enemy, there was a shout of dismay from his men. Fireballs from 3 enemy wizards lashed out, and even Radic winced in terror, before Pedrus deflected the fireballs to splash into the pasture, well short of their target. A cheer went up from the Royal Army soldiers, and Radic saw Pedrus spur his horse to leap the fence and race away across the pasture with the 3 enemy wizards following him.
Corran had momentarily frozen at first sight of the enemy, while Thunderbolt strained at the reins. Seeing Radic's horse rear up, Corran figured he no longer needed to worry about alerting the enemy, so he urged his horse on, and soon the wind roared in his ears as he raced back alongside the road, passing the soldiers, who were all moving forward as fast as their own horses could move. When the enemy threw fireballs at Pedrus, Corran flinched like everyone else, and Thunderbolt veered off the road in fear. It was not the horse's fault. Thunderbolt had never been trained as a war horse, and few horses could stand the sight and smell of fire, especially magical fire. As he struggled to control his horse, Corran saw Pedrus deflect the fireballs, which fell short to scorch the pasture grass. When the wizard's horse jumped the fence and raced away across the pasture, Corran was stunned. Why would the wizard leave them? He managed to get Thunderbolt pointed in the right direction, and was about to urge the horse onward, when his way was blocked by 2 soldiers.
"Out of my way!" Corran waved frantically, anxious to find a way through the chaos of soldiers who were struggling to control their own horses and help Pedrus. "Come with us!"
one of the soldiers shouted at him and tried to grab the reins.
"No, I must—"
"Lord Salva told us to get you to safety. Those are our orders."
The man stared into Corran's eyes with such intensity that Corran hesitated.
"Pedrus ordered me away?"
Corran couldn't believe it.
"But I'm his servant.
Fat lot of good your sword will do against wizard fire, boy. You just get in the way. I've seen Lord Salva in battle. He's an army all to himself. I'm Artiman. She is D'Artenin. You have a helmet? Put it on. Now, come with us, or we're lost."
Corran fumbled to get his helmet untied, and jammed the uncomfortable armor on his head.
It was a bit too big, and he had to tilt it back to keep it out of his eyes.
The three tried to gallop up the road, but it was now jammed between the fences by other soldiers on horseback and riderless horses that had been cut loose from the wagons. The enemy was now halfway across the pasture, having split in two groups to cut off the Royal Army front and back. Corin stood up from the saddle to watch Pedrus. His master was riding away across the pasture at an angle, heading for a gap in the trees that separated the sheep pasture from the next field. The three enemy wizards were chasing Pedrus. As Corin watched, fireballs flew back and forth, neither side getting a hit, and then Pedrus's horse plunged through the tree gap to the next field. And he was gone from sight. Corin turned to look ahead, where Radek's lead troops had forced their way into the village, sweeping aside the barricade. The captain himself was behind Corin, leading the men from the wagons.
"We're not going to make it!"
Corin shouted, seeing that the enemy would cut the road before he reached the village.
"The boy's right!"
Ottoman hauled in the reins, causing his horse to skid to a halt on the muddy dirt road, and the old soldier slid off onto the ground.
"Help me!"
the soldier called out as he began pulling apart the tall split-rail fence that lines the east side of the road. Corin and D'Artagnan joined him. Along with a half-dozen other soldiers, they swiftly opened a 20-foot gap in the fence, and soldiers began to guide their horses into the field without waiting for orders. They could see the enemy almost upon them. Captain Radek rode up, about to rebuke his men for stopping, when he saw the gap in the fence, judged how close the enemy was, and recognized Ottoman.
"Ottoman, good thinking. On with you, then, around the village, get across the bridge, and don't let anything delay you. Archers, give these men cover!"
Radek spurred his horse onward to hold off the enemy. Back on their horses, Corin, Ottoman, and D'Artagnan rode across the field at a fast trot, looking backwards to see whether all the soldiers were following them. A dozen soldiers had gone past the gap in the fence and were riding hard after Captain Radek, swords drawn, charging into the lead group of enemy soldiers, who had reached the road and jumped their horses over the low stone fence there. Only a few of the Royal Army soldiers who had gone through the fence had bows and arrows. They all jumped off their horses and knelt behind the fence. While Corin's magical skill could hit a moving target from horseback, the other archers needed to steady their aim. Arrows thudded into the enemy soldiers, breaking up their formation just as Radek and his soldiers slammed into the enemy with a ringing of steel on steel. Corin stood up in his stirrups, transfixed by the sight of his first battle. He had never seen the enemy. Now he saw them up close, not more than 50 yards away. They were terrifying. Corin felt his legs turning to jelly as he stared, transfixed. The enemy's helmets were covered with black feathers. The faceplate of their helmets were fashioned and painted to look like skulls, and they wore bones and teeth on a string around their necks or woven into their beards. To Corin, they looked like demons from a nightmare come to life. He knew from talking to Pedrus and some of Radek's men, those scary faceplates interfered with the enemy soldiers' vision. But even knowing that, Corin found his hands shaking. Unlike the swords of the Royal Army, which gleamed bright from being kept constantly cleaned and oiled, the enemy's swords were never cleaned, left covered with blood and gore from previous battles. Only the sharp edges were bare steel, a cut from such a dirty blade made for certain sickness, and some of the enemy's blades were dipped in poison. Despite his fear, Corin reined Thunderbolt to a halt. A handful of royal archers were losing their battle. There simply weren't enough of them, though they were shooting as fast as they could, and now from close range, for the enemy was now in the road and making for the gap in the fence. In a few moments, the archers would need to leap back on their horses or be overrun.
"The archers! I can help!"
Corin called out.
Ottoman cursed Corin's foolishness.
"Move! That's an order! You don't even have a bow, you young idiot!"
He whacked Thunderbolt on the horse's left flank with the flat of his sword, and the horse shot forward in fright, beyond Corin's control. To keep Corin moving, Ottoman kept his horse pressing sideways into Thunderbolt's flank, urging him forward. Corin reluctantly followed Ottoman's orders, while looking backward at the archers. Only three of the archers made it back to their horses. The others had waited too long, and were now tangled with the enemy, fighting with swords. Their bows were discarded on the ground, useless in close combat. Corin let Thunderbolt run on by himself. The fight both horrified and fascinated him, so he couldn't tear his eyes away. For all the exhausting hours Corin had spent sparring with the weapons master, he had never seen real combat, with men falling, with blood, and screams and terror and confusion. Now, only now, could he see the value in the weapon master's endless, tedious forms. In combat, real combat, no one had time to think. A soldier needed to act, without hesitation. The endless repetitions of forms had taught a soldier's muscles how to move a sword, a shield, a pike, or whatever weapon he had, without waiting for his slow brain to decide what to do.
"Make for the bridge," Ottoman called out,
holding his sword in the air to rally the men to him. Those who could followed Ottoman, urging their horses on in what was now a race. To get to the bridge beyond the village, the Royal Army men needed to go through a field between the river bluff on the left and the buildings of the small village on the right. Corin tried to judge. The field they must ride through was maybe 200 yards wide? Royal Army soldiers were still fighting with enemy troops in the village. Those few Royal Army men who had forced their way through the village were guarding the entrance to the bridge, but there were only three of them, and the enemy was now alert to the need to seize that bridge, having failed to spring their trap in the village. Corin tore his eyes away from watching the fate of the archers behind, and concentrated on where he was going. He knew Thunderbolt could easily outpace any of the Royal Army's horses, but it would be foolish to be out in front by himself. And if he got to the bridge first by himself, what would he do then? He held Thunderbolt back, despite the horse chomping at the bit and fighting the reins, keeping pace with Ottoman and D'Artagnan. The three horses reached the edge of the field and jumped a low stone wall. The next field had been planted with corn, which was not yet even knee-high. The horses had no problem finding solid ground for their hooves. They were just passing the barn that was the last building of the village, and Corin was looking ahead to the three Royal Army soldiers guarding the bridge, when D'Artagnan gave an agonized cry, leaned to the right, and fell off her horse. Corin and Ottoman wheeled their horses around as one to see D'Artagnan on her knees, an arrow protruding from her upper right leg. A group of enemy archers were crouched in the shadow of the barn. Corin opened his mouth to shout for the woman to get back on her horse when another arrow hit the young soldier square in the chest. D'Artagnan's head snapped back, and she fell to the ground without a sound. Corin was halfway out of his saddle when he felt Ottoman's hand on the collar of his vest.
"No, you can't help her," the man shouted.
"But we have to..."
Ottoman pulled Corin close so they were face to face.
"This is not a game. It's war. If you don't want to die like D'Artagnan, ride for the bridge."
Corin had never seen anyone die in battle before. His mind was a whirl with confusion while he let Ottoman lead the way toward the bridge. Tears blurred Corin's vision as Thunderbolt carried him toward safety. Enemy troops were now riding out of the village in an attempt to cut off their escape. It was going to be close. Some instinct caused Corin to duck just before an arrow whizzed past where his head had been. He was turning to see where the arrow had come from when there was a sound like a sharp axe hitting soft wood, and Ottoman gasped. An arrow was sticking out of the old soldier's back. Corin leaned over to stop Ottoman falling off his horse, but the horses moved apart, and he was too late. Ottoman fell forward, rolling out of the saddle face first, and fell to the ground. One of his horse's hooves kicked him in the head by accident as the soldier fell, throwing his helmet off. The horse stumbled and fell, rolling over, then scrambling up and running off in fright. Corin hopped down to the ground,
horrified the old soldier may already be dead. Artemon lay on his side, and groaned when Corin reached him, his eyes fluttering, unfocused. The arrow was not in deep. It had hit a thick strap on the leather vest. Corin was able to quickly wiggle it out as the man grunted in pain. Pulling the ripped vest open, Corin could see white bone in the wound. The tip must have hit a rib. Painful, but lucky for Artemon, and the arrowhead looked clean. Corin licked it and spit out. It didn't taste like poison. The old soldier was not so lucky about the wound on his head. The horse's hoof had caught him in the right temple. There was a deep gash in the shape of a horseshoe, and a lot of blood. When Corin tried to help him up, Artemon only groaned, could not keep his legs under him. The man's eyes were closed, his head lolled from side to side. There was no way Corin could get the man onto Thunderbolt's back by himself. Something, a sound, a movement of air, caused Corin to spin around. Before he realized what he was doing, his short sword was in his hand, and the blade flicked out to knock aside an arrow that had been aimed at Artemon.
"How the hell did you—"
exclaimed a passing soldier, astonished as Corin stood up. And this time, his sword blade neatly sliced the next arrow shaft in two, with the tip diving into the ground.
"Help me," Corin pleaded. "I can't get Artemon onto my horse." "Damn fool you are, and damn fool I am too, but—"
The man waved to another soldier, and together the two men quickly picked up Artemon and flopped him face down on Thunderbolt's back. Then they were off. Jamming his sword back into its sheath, Corin climbed up into the saddle, and this time dug his heels into the horse's side and loosed the reins. Thunderbolt moved, surging forward so fast that Corin almost fell off backwards, the horse's hooves digging clods of dirt out of the ground and flinging them backwards in his headlong flight. In less than 20 strides, the great horse had passed the horses of the two soldiers who stopped to help Corin, their mouths gaping open as Thunderbolt, nostrils flaring, passed them as if they were standing still. Passed them while carrying two people on his back. If Corin had time, he would have fairly burst with pride about his horse. But all he could think of then was to get Artemon to the bridge. And, with a clatter of hooves on wood, they were on the bridge. Some instinct caused Corin to hop off and hand Thunderbolt's reins to a passing rider.
"Take Artemon across the bridge. He's hurt badly," he shouted.
And the man took hold of the reins and guided Thunderbolt across the bridge at a trot. Corin ran over to the Royal Army men guarding the bridge entrance, who were now 7 soldiers, including 3 archers. Leaving his sword in its sheath, Corin asked breathlessly,
"What can I do? Can I give you arrows while you shoot?"
One of the archers nodded and indicated his quiver of arrows on the ground. But another archer held up his right wrist, which lay at an unnatural angle to his arm. It was sprained badly.
"Not much use I am with this bow,"
the man said with disgust, and spat on the ground.
"Can you use a bow?"
Before Corin could answer, another soldier snapped,
"Don't waste your bow on a boy. I'll take the bow myself before—" "Shut your mouth, Tegan," answered another of the archers. "Corin here is the wizard's boy. And if you haven't seen his archery lessons with the weapons master, I have. Wizard skill he has with a bow, never misses, and he can shoot an arrow further than any of us. Hedras, give him your bow."
Corin felt much better with a bow in his hand. Karma, with purpose. The injured soldier called Hedras handed him an arrow, and Corin sighted along it, then realized he was insulting a royal archer who, of course, would have checked his own arrows.
"Sorry."
Hedras shook his head side to side.
"Don't be. I'll do the same. Always check weapons you're not familiar with. If you have the time. I think our time is about up."
He pointed toward the village. The surviving Royal Army soldiers, with Captain Raddick and 2 of his lieutenants at the rear, were past the village and riding at full speed toward the bridge, pursued by the enemy. To the west, more of the enemy were riding to cut them off, and the enemy was ahead.
"Hit the lead riders! Corin, you take the right,"
the head archer ordered, and the two Royal Army archers and Corrin knocked arrows to strings and drew back. The enemy rider Corrin sighted on would be colliding with the Royal Army men in a few seconds.